Hello and welcome again to Melbourne Indie Media Radio here on 3CR 855 AM. It is Wednesday the 8th of February.
It is, and it's 5 o'clock in the afternoon on the dot.
Or if you're listening to us online, it's anytime you like.
Podcasting.
As you can also download the shows from melbourne.indiemedia.org/radio, or you can subscribe to the podcast, which means you can download or have each show delivered to you in the media player of your choice.
I tried to find a media player for Linux that would do podcasts, and I couldn't find one.
Really?
Yeah. Oh. Isn't that strange?
I refuse to believe that.
Well, find me one.
I will.
Go find me one.
I can't think of anything off the top of my head, but I'm sure there are.
Yeah, I mean, so am I. I can go back into that, but
yeah, let's.
You know, it'll do media, well, streaming, but maybe we should talk about that in the tech section.
We should. So today we will be doing our, you've led straight into it, Rory, thank you very much.
Aren't we smooth? What a segue.
We are, local, national, global and regional news that we do, and of course our kind of tech hacktivism, let's just call it the hacktivism section. It's a bit cheesy, but.
But it's not actually hacktivism.
Well, it is kind of hacktivism.
Well, we'll find out as I give you a definition later on in the show of hacking and hacktivism.
I hope you don't confuse hacking with cracking.
Well, would you, like, stop preempting my... Why don't you just tell everyone?
Oh, sorry.
So we'll have stories, music,
fun, games,
woohoo,
laughter, joy.
I have,
and normally a little bit of sadness.
Well, it's not quite a happy puppy story today, but it's sort of humorous in a dark kind of way. But enough talk about it. Let's do it.
Let's.
Local. Fire away.
Okay, from the melbourne.indiemedia.org website, top story at the moment is democracy for sale at corporate rates. A new federal bill proposed by the Howard government will see the limit for disclosed donations increase from $1,500 to $10,000. Quote, this legislation does nothing but pervert our democracy, Australian Centre for Democracy and Justice Director Hemi Goonan said. By increasing the disclosure threshold for a donation to a political party from $1,500 to $10,000, you're essentially announcing that our government's policies can be bought, unquote. It was recently revealed that British billionaire Lord Michael Ashcroft donated $1 million to the Australian Liberal Party. And just to not let the Labor Party off the hook, certainly I'm sure there's plenty of very, very rich people who give them money as well.
Do you think the Labor Party will vote against this
proposal?
Well,
you know, I like to think that the Labor Party are there for the working people of Australia.
Mm.
But that illusion normally lasts for about half a second.
Mm.
And then I go, what the hell was I thinking? It's the Australian Labor Party.
Yeah.
Maybe in 1920 or something, but, you know.
Yeah, I'd like to...
Call me a cynic, but hey.
I like to call them whipped curs, but I think that's putting dogs in a kind of bracket that's unfair to our canine brothers.
And sisters.
Yeah, that's just very true.
True. Moving right along. ASIO questions Australian peace activist. Australian peace activist Kieran O'Reilly was questioned by ASIO agents in Brisbane after he arrived on a flight from Ireland on the 3rd of February. Kieran is one of the Pit Stop Ploughshares defendants awaiting a third trial in Dublin on July 5th, with no restrictions placed on travel to Australia. He is, of course, charged with being part of this group that smashed up a US warplane that was on its way to Iraq.
But hasn't that all been...
No, the trial's still going on.
Jesus.
In Dublin. He was questioned on his plans in Australia, the civil disobedience that occurred during the Shoalwater Operation Talisman Saver joint US-Australia military exercises in 2005, and whether he planned to accompany his brother Sean to Alice Springs for his court date arising from his arrest following a peace demonstration at the CIA-NSA outback base at Pine Gap. It's not the first time ASIO has expressed interest in peace movement activists. In 2005, ASIO made an adverse security report on US peace activist and Melbourne Indie Radio favourite son,
Scott Parkin,
resulting in his deportation. Parkin has launched a federal court challenge to uncover the reasons for his treatment at Attorney General Philip Ruddock. To uncover the reasons for his treatment as Attorney General Philip Ruddock has refused to divulge the contents of the adverse security assessment that led to Mr. Parkin's removal from the country. Let's see if we get some answers.
Likely.
That's likely. Aren't we cynical today?
Ruddock, a.k.a. Montgomery Burns. Yes.
Planet collapsing under global warming stress. Quote, the problem is that all aspects of the environment are being treated as if they were separate. Reduce C2O and the problem is solved in the accepted thinking. However, less carbon dioxide in the atmosphere will not reduce the impact of what is already overburdened. Unquote. This is also from Climate IMC News. The sea level rise is accelerating, and a new study finds that polar ice at risk this century with dramatic changes in West Antarctic ice sheet. While Australia's hot summer has had a devastating effect bleaching coral on the Great Barrier Reef, in New Zealand, activists from the Save Happy Valley campaign have occupied the site of the Cyprus open cast coal mine being developed by the state-owned Solid Energy. It was a very jaggedy little news report, that one. Let's move along.
Let's.
CEO wages up, workers' incomes stagnate. John Shields from the University of Sydney's Economic Department has blown a hole in the Howard government's assertion that the trickle-down effect plays a central role in the Australian economy. He has demonstrated that chief executive officers, CEOs, pay packets in Australia have exploded over the life of the Howard government. Industrial relations academics have said work choices is dangerously flawed, though through research papers published in a special edition of the Journal of Australian Political Economy. Meanwhile, Telstra has disclosed it spent $1.3 million on a trip to Lindeman Island for senior executives just before announcing staff cuts of $12,000. $1.3 million! I wonder how many people were there. Like, even if you sent, like, 100 people, like, that would just be, like, the most insane amount of money.
It would be, what, $10,000 for each?
Yeah. Is that right? 130 people, $10,000 each.
Yeah, $1.3 million.
But that's, even that for a week.
Yeah, it's like a lot of money. But is Lindeman Island one of those really, really super bougie
Islands? Yeah, it's pretty fancy. But, like...
But come on, like, executives work really hard.
They're really stressed.
You know, they need to de-stress. They need those massages.
I can't believe they made them have a meeting when they went to Lindeman Island.
Isn't it crazy? There. That's management for you never get to sort of step away from it.
No, exactly. You know,
no matter where you are.
That's why you need a holiday to Lindeman Island.
That's why they deserve their 500 grand in shares each year.
And I reckon, as a taxpayer, I'm happy to contribute some of my money to them having a holiday in Lindeman Island if it makes them better workers.
Yeah, that's so true. And can we just step back a bit to what you were first saying about the trickle-down effect? Because I've always found that the trickle-down effect gets in the way on the ladder of opportunity, making it really slippery. Thus, you know, your attempt to climb the ladder of opportunity is foiled by the trickle-down effect, and you slip down a rung or two.
I always thought that the trickle-down was kind of like the bosses up the top urinating on the people. But anyway...
Are we taking this too literally?
We are. All right. But let's be serious.
Yes.
Again, because we're in a very serious...
Do you have many stories left?
I have one more story left. Activists fight for Australian forests. Conservationists allege violence at Eden Chipmill by company employees or contractors against peaceful protesters who entered and held up work. 25 conservationists shut down the Eden Wood Chipmill on the 27th of January by locking onto machinery inside. Also in the Weld Valley in Tasmania, activists and community members are holding an access gate to the Lower Weld Valley open. Activists say that a World Heritage area is under threat and have erected a tree sit on an access road proposed to a logging coop adjacent to the Tasmanian World Heritage Area. And I think there was also a report on Melbourne Indie Media about some assaults that recently happened down in the World Valley too by local logging contractors.
Alleged assaults. Because it's really, you know, in the whole history of forest activism.
Never trust the hippie.
Yeah.
Never
trust those feathers. Okay, let's go to a cut. We'll be back in a sec.
Have you paid your 3CR subscription? Be a paid-up member of a media outlet that broadcasts independent, uncensored stories. Subscribing to 3CR means you are making a stand as an individual and being a part of a community that is committed to social justice for everyone, not just a privileged few. For just $25 concession or $50 waged, you can buy a piece of media diversity. Phone 9419 8377 with credit card details or send cheque or money order to 3CR PO Box 1277 Collingwood 3066. And in the face of troubles.
I just like to say that was tongue in cheek. That never trust
which,
a hippie.
Which bit?
Yeah, I trust hippies.
Some of my best friends are hippies. It's true.
Yeah, it is, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Okay, on to national news. On Sydney Indie Media, they're running a story on delegates being blocked. It turns out that Tasmanian officials have blocked access to Tasmanian prisons for the International Conference on Penal Abolition delegates. There's been a history of access to prisons at previous ICOPAs, and putting a focus on human rights in prisons in the local country and ensuring accountability. Attorney General Judy Jackson has not responded to repeated attempts at communications, and the Director of Prisons in Tasmania, Graham Barber, has employed what the site calls stalling tactics. In a phone conversation with a Justice Action spokesperson, he admitted receipt of personal letters sent to individual prisoners by Justice Action requesting visits and blatantly stated that he was not going to pass them on. He laughingly asked, "Is there a time frame involved?" and further stated, "You won't be meeting with the minister and there won't be general visits to prison." Barrister and legal advisor to Prison Action and Reform Group, Greg Barnes, stated that the actions of the Attorney General and Mr. Barber were in direct contravention of Australia's obligation to comply with the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. Under the convention to which Australia is signatory, all people in prison shall be treated with humanity. I don't know about how that actually...
Sounds like a contradiction in terms already.
Yeah, well, if you're in...
Put you in a cage and we'll treat you with humanity.
Mm. It seems very, very vaguely worded too. Be treated with humanity. I don't know about that. Okay, moving on. Another piece on Sydney Indie Media is marijuana and mental health funding. Now, it turns out that the Parliamentary Secretary to the Minister for Health, Christopher Pyne, has suggested that mental health funding under a Council of Australian Governments agreement, that's the COAG agreement, should be tied to tougher marijuana laws. Now, despite claims by some mental health professionals that some pre-existing mental illness can be exacerbated or, quote, brought on by marijuana use, the evidence that supports this is extremely dubious. Australian researchers tested the hypothesis of a causal relationship between cannabis use and schizophrenia by carefully examining the incidence of schizophrenia in Australia over a 30-year period. The results, published in 2003, found that although the prevalence of marijuana use had increased markedly during that period, there was no evidence of a significant increase in the evidence of schizophrenia. Spokesperson for the Darwin-based chapter of the Network Against Prohibition, Gary Meyerhoff, said the end results of the Commonwealth's proposed recriminalisation of marijuana would be a dramatic increase in the number of people in our prisons. The almost negligible negative health effects of marijuana call for legislation and regulation, not further criminalisation.
See, I think... But you can
no, please, editorialise.
Well, I think there are some links. I think you can argue against linking mental health funding to tougher marijuana laws without kind of saying marijuana has no kind of mental health
effects. I'm sorry, when did you get your medical degree?
Well, when did they?
Well, the part here where it says that the 2003 report...
Which report? By who?
Well, it's Indie Media, it's not an academic...
Well, there you go.
I don't know, I'm presuming that Australian researchers and the report published in 2003.
I just don't think that saying there's no links between marijuana and mental health issues is a way to say mental health funding should
no,
be...
No, I mean, you're totally right.
It should be like going, there should just be adequate mental health
yeah,
funding.
Yeah, I mean, that's and the real
many,
issue.
And how many mental health issues does alcohol cause or whatever yeah. else? But so I mean, think they're arguing it on the wrong terms.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with you there, but I think your argument that, you know, is just as flawed by saying, oh, well, I don't know, it seems to me that there is a link. I mean, nobody needs to mention that at all. That's a separate issue.
You know,
but you're right. I mean, well, you just did then.
Yeah, let's not even make the link of marijuana smoking. Let's just say that mental health should be properly funded.
Yeah, I mean, it should. But the whole issue is this thing that the federal government's doing now, which is just blatant moralising on issues. Like,
and scapegoating, as they do.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's just like the RU486. Yeah. And this thing that, you know, everything else has to go through the Food and Drug Administration. But this, no, the one minister can effectively decide whether or not thousands of people are allowed to utilise a medical abortion. I mean, it's ridiculous.
It is, Rory. You should write a letter.
What, to the Age?
To somebody, write a letter.
I should get a radio show. Okay, moving on
you
now.
Speak your mind. Let people know how you feel.
On to Perth Indie Media. They're running a piece on trolling, and trolling has supposedly been legislated as illegal now in the US. For those who don't know, trolling is messages posted on the web specifically to...
Just look at any Melbourne Indie Media article down the bottom, you'll see trolling.
Yeah, on the comments section, just someone going, you guys are wankers.
Someone being an idiot and saying something that doesn't have anything to do with all the articles actually posted about, generally.
Yeah. Or just attacking the author or anything like that. Now, it turns out that in January, the illustrious President Bush signed into law a prohibition on posting annoying web messages or sending annoying emails without disclosing your true identity, i.e. trolling. In other words, it's okay to flame someone on a mailing list or in a blog as long as you do it under your real name. The prohibition is buried in a Department of Justice Reauthorization Act. Criminal penalties include hefty fines and 2 years in prison. The US federal law states...
For every troll and mowing media, be a rich man.
Yeah, aren't a lot of them cops too?
Yeah, I've got a lot more poor cops. Works for me.
Can I finish this?
You can.
The US federal law states that when you annoy someone on the internet, you must disclose your identity. Here's the relevant language. Quote, whoever utilises any device or software that can be used to originate telecommunications or other types of communications that are transmitted in whole or in part by the internet without disclosing his identity. Oh, so it doesn't matter about women. It's just his.
Mm.
Okay. With intent to annoy, abuse, threaten or harass any person who receives blah, 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 shall be fined, blah, 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 blah. Now, the use of the word annoy is particularly problematic, says Marv Johnson, Legislative Counsel for the American Civil Liberties Union. What is annoying to one person may not be annoying to someone else. So that would seem to be the problem. Mm. Apart from the fact that legislating against annoyance would... I don't know how that works. Okay, one final piece we've got here is a report on PNG, Papua New Guinea. Perth Indie Media is running this article with links and a bit of the report. I think the report's 77 pages long, but it's titled Terror Raising the Forest, Guns, Corruption, Illegal Logging, JI, and the Indonesian Military in Papua New Guinea. This eye-opening report paints a disturbing picture of the situation in the northwest border provinces of PNG, involving corruption, gun smuggling, illegal logging, sex slavery, and the JI. JI is Jemaah Islamiyah. The evidence uncovered points to a concerted campaign of economic, social and military intelligence destabilisation and domination of East Sepik and Sandwan provinces by Indonesia. Information was gathered through interviews and conversations that were conducted with West Papuan refugees, guerrillas, priests, bishops, grassroots activists, etc., etc., including ADF personnel, ex-police, pilots, fishermen, villagers, journalists, bookmakers, vanilla growers, marijuana growers and even gun smugglers and a pimp. The report was investigated and compiled by Nick Chesterfield and makes a very interesting, if quite disturbing, reading. You can download it in PDF format from the Perth Indie Media site if you're interested in that sort of thing.
Mm.
There we go. That's national.
Sounds good.
Let's go to a track, shall we?
Let's.
And then we'll be back with more. This is going down to Frank's.
I'm
There you go. That was a bit of an abrupt ending there, I think.
That was.
That was, not excessive language, what do you call it? Not abusive language.
Explicit language.
Explicit language warning here. So put your fingers in your ears for a second. That was the True Motherfucking POD. And that track was Going Down to Frankston off the album 7. All right. Regional
news.
It's 5:22 p.m. by the way, and it's a balmy day in Melbourne, Victoria,
45
Australia.
Degrees outside. It's very hot. Don't go out there.
Could cook an egg on the pavement.
Could.
In fact, I did this morning.
Yum.
Maybe we should just...
I was going to go into a story that's really terrible. I can't do it now.
All right.
I'm going to go into something else that's a little bit less terrible. Workers on strike at Wellington Freezing Works. Come on, people are on strike. Workers at... Look. Anyway. Workers on strike at Wellington Freezing Works.
Come on. No. Right, serious. Come on. Oh, God, I'll go into a story then if you can't. All right, I just wanted to... This was the story that I was going to do later, but it's about Attorney General Alberto...
Stop it.
Alberto Gonzalez. It turns out that... He's on the floor laughing. Oh, this is such a lack of professionalism. There's been some stuff recently in the US about how 5,000 or so people, that's what the figure that's come out. Would you stop it? Get out of the studio. Get out. Go on. Out. Oh, that's better. Now he's out of here. Right, in the US, 5,000 people have reportedly been had their emails and their phones tapped by the NSA and, I don't know if it's the CIA, but the Office of Homeland Security. And Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez has come out and said, and says here, this is from Philadelphia Indy Media, by the way, that, Al-Qaeda members are aware that they're under surveillance, quote, but if they're not reminded of it about it all the time in the newspapers and in the stories, they sometimes forget, unquote. Which Philadelphia Indy Media somehow maintains that is meant to suggest that American people will be tipping off Al-Qaeda if they talk so much about this kind of thing. I just thought that was really interesting because it's like when you get pulled over by the cops and they would like want to search your pockets and stuff and you go like, I don't think so, which is your legal right. And they're like, why? What, do you got something to hide? It just seems more than a little ridiculous to me. So I just thought I'd point that out to everyone. All right. Back in the studio?
Sure.
All right, go.
Okay, Asia Pacific News. Workers on strike at Wellington Freezing Works. Workers at Taylor Preston Meat Company have gone on a 3-day strike in a fight for better pay and conditions. The strike started on Wednesday morning and workers have been picketing their factory in Nagurunga Gorge. 2,000 strikers received lots of support from passing traffic this morning, Tuesday that was. Workers published an ad in the Dominion Post stating what situation they are in. Many workers at the Taylor Preston plant get $9.50 New Zealand an hour, that is, so about $8 perhaps, the lowest adult rate which can be paid in New Zealand. Many of the workers were harassed when the company called the police to stop the union organisers talking to them. But in 1999, they began to hold meetings in a church hall in Poirua, where the company couldn't threaten them or take their names. Not all workers have joined the union. Unite's workers voted to go out strike by 297-16. After the picket tomorrow, Thursday morning, workers will decide on future actions. So that's quite interesting. Also in Manila, is that 74 poor folk crushed to death in stampede, according to Quezon City Indie Media. The Philippines, which was also on some of the mainstream news as well. At least 74 persons, mostly poor elderly women, perished and more than 300 others were injured on Saturday, February the 4th, in a stampede of people joining the first anniversary of a popular TV game show. Other media outlets place the number of casualties at 88. ABS-CBN claims that only 74 died in the stampede. The weekend tragedy brought the nation into mourning and renewed calls for immediate and long-term measures to address poverty. Wowie Wowie, which is broadcast on the which is broadcast on the ABS-CBN network, was supposed to celebrate its first anniversary with a show at this city's Philippine Sports Arena, formerly Ultra. But as early as Monday, thousands have started to flock to the venue, reaching an estimated 50,000 by Saturday morning. The stampede reportedly broke out at around 6:30 a.m. on Saturday as thousands pressed towards the Ultra's iron gates. Many of the casualties who stayed in front of the gates for days in order to go to join the game show's contestants were crushed to their death. The program was to give away 2 million pesos, $39,200 in cash prizes, a house and a lot package, and two motorcycles, amongst others.
So it was a game show.
It was a game show.
That was why, 70 people were killed.
But wow. I think that it was more the point they're making is that people were poor.
And yeah, yeah.
The kind of opportunity to get out of that poverty was what the game show
provided.
And I'm not sure that the rest of the mainstream media is necessarily looking at it in those terms. So I think it's an interesting way to think about that situation, which is obviously not very good at all. And the last thing I have is about Nepal, which we've been following for the last few weeks, which is seeing a significant surge in anti-government or anti-royalist activity, given that I think today, actually, there are some less than authentic elections that the king who organised a coup and dissolved the parliament about a year and a bit ago has put on. So it's some news from around that issue, I guess. Dozens of seven-party activists arrested from anti-election rallies. Police arrested dozens of leaders and activists of the agitating political parties in different parts of the country during anti-election rallies on Tuesday against today's municipal elections. In Kathmandu, at least 18 so-called agitators were arrested from separate protest rallies carried out by the Nepali Congress, the United Left Front, this afternoon. Over a dozen NC, Nepali Congress activists, were apprehended from a rally in Tahiti, where half a dozen protesters were detained during a rally organised by the United Left Front at Butahati. United Left Front leader CP Mainali was amongst those arrested. The rallies were taken out despite a heavy security presence in view of the week-long nationwide ban, which is a shutdown strike called by the Maoists from Sunday. And looking at that general strike, the week-long general strike that was called, the normal life of Kathmandu, according to Nepal News, has been partially affected on Wednesday, the fourth day of the seven-day-long Nepal-barred general strike called by the Maoists. Like in the previous 3 days of bans, shops in the interior parts of the city are open. Shops in major thoroughfares remain closed. The government announced a public holiday on Wednesday and banned the plying of vehicles in Kathmandu Valley in the areas where polling stations are located. It's the plying of vehicles.
To move a vehicle.
Move a vehicle. Yeah, that's right. What I understood. In the capital on Tuesday, the third day of the ban, normal life was partially crippled with more vehicles plying on the roads and more shops opening. A sizable number of tempos, microbuses, taxis and minibuses were seen plying to provide services to commuters. The last bit of news that I'll do about Nepal is about five security personnel which were killed and three injured when Maoists launched a massive attack in Dangkuta on Tuesday evening. Maoists launched a massive attack targeting district administration offices, regional administration office and all security agencies in the district, including the 2nd Brigade of the Royal Nepalese Army, according to reports. Three Royal Nepalese Army personnel and two personnel of the armed police force were killed during the attack. That's probably just the tip of the iceberg in terms of what's going on in Nepal at the moment. It's
well, we're not getting a lot of information out of there, really, are we?
No, and all that is coming from a site. There's no indie media in Nepal. The closest one is in India, and the India IMC isn't particularly active at the moment. Mm. So all that information that I'm getting there is coming from a site called nepalnews.com, if anyone is interested in checking out any more information about the situation there.
Okay. Let's get to a car. We'll be back with Global.
Born free.
Yes, it's true. The best things in life are free. 3CR is free. Free to tell the truth. Free from corporate and government sponsorship. Free from corrupt journalism and industry-generated propaganda. Free from stereotypical programming.
Subscribe to 3CR. 9419 8377.
All right, not a whole lot of Global this week. On Tennessee Indie Media from the US, there's a really interesting piece, I believe, written by a former Marine or someone from their forces, their armed forces. But the article's on the situation in Iraq and US forces there. I'm just going to give you some quotes from it because it's really quite long, but there's some really interesting stuff. In an analysis by some Harvard economists, they estimate that the true cost of this war, which is the war in Iraq, is to be an incredible $1 to $2 trillion. And just to put that number into perspective, the entire gross national product of the US economy is $6 to $7 trillion per year. This figure includes the total cost of pensions, healthcare, beans, bullets, and all the rest. So it says, if you recall one of Osama bin Laden's speeches released about a year after the 9/11 attack, he said he would bleed us dry financially. The Islamists are doing just that in Iraq. Currently, the war debt will be the burden for the next two generations minimum. Another quote is, modern terrorists, guerrillas / insurgents have made winning impossible. This is the title of the piece, is Why Wars Are Impossible to Win Anymore. Have made winning impossible because they've made it undefinable. The Palestinian militant group Hamas has no more than 5,000 fighters, yet Israel has been unable to defeat them despite 20 years of military action and billions of dollars. And now Hamas has won enough support in an election to take a major role in the region. A relatively small number of insurgents can win on today's modern battlefield simply by not losing. This is especially true in military occupations. In Iraq, all the insurgency leaders have to do is keep recruiting enough fighters to replace the ones that we kill. It is easy for them to do because we make so many enemies during the occupation. And the writer refers to Vietnam and similar kinds of occupying wars where, you know, you pretty much win by just not losing. You don't even necessarily have to win too many battles. You just need to keep bleeding whoever the occupier is dry, and then they'll get out. The last little quote that's interesting is that the army missed its lowered recruiting goals for 2005 by 8%. In an act of desperation, they are currently accepting new recruits as old as 42.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and there's
that's
lots
similar
of
similar to the to the British lowering the fitness standards that are required for recruits.
Really?
As well, yeah. Because there were certain, you know, percentage of body fat you're allowed to have or et cetera, or height, and that they've actually kind of got a bit more lax on them because they're not getting enough people joining up. Which isn't surprising, really.
No.
But it's good to know that people aren't joining up.
Well, yeah. I thought you meant it's good to know that the...
It's good to know that I could get in.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Thanks for it. Just have a go at my weight.
And moving on now to... What's that? Well, I think that's someone's mobile phone.
It's not mine.
When I say someone's, I mean mine.
Wow.
I will be having a go at whoever's calling. On to Indie Media Island. Well, it is there. No, it's in my phone. I should have... It's in my bag. I didn't... Alright, it's gone now. Indie Media Island, they've got a link to an article on what's going on in Germany with the massive protests against the NATO security conference. Each year in February, Munich turns into a city... the spelling on this is really atrocious, or just the way it's put, it's sort of been put forward. So I assume it's done by someone who's German. But suffice to say, NATO has a security conference there with lots of different, you know, military and corporate people there. And supposedly lots of protesters get out there. I think maybe last year there was 5,000 protesters and 5,000 riot cops. Mm-hmm. This year's guests include Condoleezza Rice, Donald Rumsfeld and others. And finally, on Indie Media UK, there's a piece on witnesses at the Genoa trial. On the 25th of January, the last out of 8 British witnesses and one from New Zealand gave their testimonies about the bloody nighttime raid of the Genoa Social Forum and Diaz schools in Genoa during the 2001 G8 protests. The trial of 29 police officers, including many senior ones, for various crimes of brutality and fabricating evidence, has been running now since April 2005. The first witnesses gave evidence just over 3 months ago, and it's expected that this phase of the trial will last until early summer. In the raid on the Diaz school, over 90 people were arrested. Over 60 people suffered injuries after police savagely beat people, some still in their sleeping bags. 31 people were taken to hospital, 3 of them in a critical state. Some are still receiving medical treatment. Running in parallel is also the trial of yet more police and others accused of beating protesters who were held at the Bolzaneto detention centre after the protest and the raid. The piece has got lots of links to articles and testimonies and such forth related to the story and the trial and what happened just in general at Genoa. There you go. Track? Shall we go to that? It's 5:38. Here is a tortoise track.
You are listening to the Melbourne Indie Media Radio Show on 3CR 855 AM and on the web at melbourne.indiemedia.org/radio, where you can download the individual shows or subscribe to the podcast.
Can we get our podcast on the Apple, the
iTunes?
Know, iTunes.
Yeah, we thing? Can actually. We should do that.
Because I recently.
iTunes sucks, but you know.
Well, yeah, I did, but.
Well, we should,
yeah. No, because, I mean, I was running iTunes because, like I was saying before, I couldn't find anything, any Linux programs to...
Are you running iTunes on Ubuntu?
No. No.
I'm surprised.
Linux
you could do that.
Apple don't, like, really do anything for Linux distros.
Probably not.
Such as Ubuntu. No, I've, you know, got a multiple boot thing going on.
Cool boot. Yeah.
So,
all right. We should do that. It's something we should do.
Yeah, just because I was just going to say, because I was running it the other day, and it's really like, when you're looking for podcasts, you just click, you know, like this podcast section, and it just takes you to the store, and it's got like a whole load there, and you just one button, subscribe. You don't have to put anything in, or I think for most people, the idea of actually having to right-click, go, copy link location.
Just, again, for people who are looking on the, it's on the left-hand sidebar of the Melbourne Indie Media site, or it's on... that URL that I just gave out, /radio, but all you need to do when you see the podcast button is right-click on it, and then you copy the URL, and then you go to your media player, and where it says add podcast, you add in the URL and click OK, and then it should be all A-OK.
The URL, for those of you who don't know, is the address.
The site.
So you can also just go, if you right click, you can go copy link address or there'll be something like that, and then you just, and it'll be like this, the address of wherever it is, www.blahblahblahblah.php or something.
Or you can also go to the Odeo link as well and just subscribe through Odeo.
Okay. For the tech section today...
Because we haven't done that yet. Well, no, that was, you know, just that last two or three
I was going to rant for about 20 minutes on hacktivism, but I'll try and keep it a bit shorter.
Sermon.
Or I'll just do it really quickly. No. Basically, what I was going to say is that hacktivism is this kind of the fusion between hacking and activism, a mix of sort of politics and technology. A lot of this, the stuff I'm talking about here is from the website www.thehacktivist.com/hacktivism. If you can go to the hacktivist, you'll find it. But basically, you've got hackers and activists. And a hacker is, in the old school version of the word, it's someone who is a person who enjoys exploring the details of programmable systems and how to stretch their capabilities. Someone who is capable of creatively overcoming or circumventing their limitations, which is separate to what people nowadays think of as a hacker, which is what, in the old school sense, is a cracker, which is someone who basically wants to break into systems. Now, so basically, hacktivism is, well, activism itself is defined as taking direct action or militant action to achieve a political or social goal. So, hacktivists are people who just use computers and want to sort of stretch and explore details of computers to achieve, like, activist goals. Now, one really interesting thing about this that I thought was interesting on the website is that, the kind of ethics of hackers, which is about access to computers being unlimited and total, information being free, mistrust of authority, creating art, and the fact that computers can change your life for the better. Hackers, you know, don't like censorship, see it as a human rights violation, and such forth. And the notion that the GNU Linux operating system, such as, you know, Red Hat Linux or Ubuntu or something like that, evolved from a hacker ethic. See, this is what I meant. I could go on forever.
And you could talk about the intersections with the free software movement.
I could.
What are you doing?
I could.
We have talked a little bit about the free software movement.
Well, I'll just quickly go on that. Michigan Institute of Technology.
Massachusetts.
Sorry, always confused. The people who were working there were being lured into commercial ventures, and Richard Stallman, who was one of the guys working there, became concerned about this sort of decay of the hacker community and the increasing control over proprietary code. So he decided to create a free operating system modelled after Unix. And Linus Torvalds began development on a kernel and released the initial source code for it named Linux. So together those two, Stallman and Linus, formed the GNU/Linux operating system and released it under the general public license, which is known as copyleft. And GPL allows you to modify and copy the software as long as you make the source code available to others. So this is what we were talking about before, is open source. Which is very much so based in that sort of hacker community idea of openness and such forth.
Sharing of knowledge.
Yeah, and so just to quickly go on, like, hacktivism is sort of about, there's different kinds of things, like there's stuff like Millworm broke into the computer systems at India's Bhabha Atomic Research Centre in protest against nuclear weapons testing. Some people, Bronkbuster and Zyklon, disabled firewalls in order to allow China's internet users uncensored access to the net.
Wow.
What else? Exploit defaced the websites of Mexico's finance ministry and health ministry to protest the government of President Ernesto Zedillo and show solidarity with the Zapatistas, and some other stuff on Indonesian websites.
See, I would call those people cracktivists.
Yes, that's what I was just going to say. That, though, is more cracktivism, whereas the kind of hacktivism we're talking about more is just the use of
things like indie media or, you know, podcasting, or ways in which you can use technologies to get your information out there, or play with the technological systems to do new things with them.
Exactly. I mean, one of the bits they talk about in the piece is recognising the benefits of integrating activism and computer internet technology, and the open architecture technology of the internet playing a complementary and sort of beneficial role that fits in with activist networks, and talking about your ability to disseminate information really quickly in a really decentralised manner, so you don't have like just one area where the information is held, and then if the police decide to raid that area, you know, it all gets shut down.
Exactly.
And email lists. And that's more to do with sort of hacktivism. I mean, it's not even really stretching the limits of the actual computer networks or anything like that. That's just using computers.
Mm. It's amazing how much things have changed in the activist world since the internet came along. I don't know what it was like beforehand, really.
Well, there was one interesting article I was reading talking about the early days of podcasting, which was like last year. Podcasting has boomed, like video podcasting.
Vodcasting.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it's called vodcasting.
Oh, that's sickening. was unknown mid last year, basically.
But the bandwidth wasn't there. It's only just coming in that, you know, it's even possible to download that amount of video.
But it's just boom, suddenly it's all taken off. So, it's just, I mean, I just sort of really wanted to highlight in that this notion of the intersection between technology and computer technology and activism, in the sense of, you know, looking at programs and looking at systems and being able to sort of be interested in them and stretch them and work them to help with your activism, which has a sort of negative and a positive kind of view, like that cracktivism where you're just defacing stuff or sending out viruses and worms with a political bent, which come up and say, you know, get Israel out of Palestine or something like that. Like, there's been a range of worms and viruses doing that. Not many, admittedly. But and then the more positive stuff like disabling firewalls, which I wouldn't call cracktivism. I would say that's actually non-destructive. Wouldn't you?
Yeah, it's like bring down a wall that separates you from your neighbour.
Oh, please.
So you can hug.
You and your hippie friends can but another aspect is what you're about to talk about now, which is peer-to-peer stuff.
Well, yes, it is.
Just quickly.
Well, I was just going to quickly mention, I mean, part of this, what we're trying to do with this section is, I guess, get a little bit more of the lingo and jargon understood by activists and the ways in which they can use technological tools to get their message out there. And one of the technologies that people should definitely look at is peer-to-peer, which you may have also heard of. People would have heard of things like Napster, which was maybe perhaps the first large-scale peer-to-peer network, which I think at its peak had perhaps 70 million users, from what I remember. And the difference between this and traditional modes of distributing files or music on the net, this is back in the late 90s, of course, was that instead of downloading your music or your files from a single computer, suddenly everybody's computer became a server. So you could download your music from 70 million computers instead of having to have, you know, instead of one company having to have one giant repository of computers from where you get all your information, which is incredibly empowering for people who don't have the kind of money to spend millions of dollars on having 100 servers in a giant temperature-controlled office.
So basically everyone who was running that peer-to-peer program would then nominate which files on their computer they wanted to share, and then you could just search, you know, put in Britney Spears, for example, and you'd find everyone who had Britney Spears on their computer, and you could
download it from them or download it from multiple people at the same time.
Exactly.
Which meant that downloading the file would be even faster. So this obviously in terms of music and now increasingly with video also continues to explode, and one of the major technologies that people are using is a thing called BitTorrent, which you might have heard the moral panic about BitTorrent from various different copyright holders and their PR companies complaining about people downloading movies and other such things. But you can also use these technologies not just to download Hollywood movies. You can use them to get your media or your video, etc., out there to the world. It takes a little bit of playing with, but definitely easier to download than upload at the moment. But you can certainly get your head around it fairly easily with a little bit of technical knowledge and a bit of reading.
So it's not all just downloading illegal copyrighted files?
No, it's not all that.
No. I just, by the way, in terms of that, I heard that some ISPs, internet service providers, like, you know, Telstra or Optus, in the US in particular, were blocking BitTorrent traffic and trying to sort of stop people downloading, you know, using up all their bandwidth to download stuff. So now BitTorrent is talking about encrypting their traffic so that the ISPs don't know that it's peer-to-peer traffic.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Cool. I could talk for a long time.
Yeah, we could.
Here, but we should go to the calendar.
Maybe in a couple of weeks we'll have one show that's just all tech, and we can geek out big time.
And no one will understand what we're talking about.
But this, you know, technology is becoming more and more important in our everyday world.
It's true.
It's no longer typewriters and MS-DOS.
It's not. Not anymore. Okay, shall we
calendar.
Go to the calendar?
Calendar, then a track, and then we're done.
Yeah, the calendar's quite short this week. People, you should be uploading your calendar items to melbourne.indiemedia/calendar, and they go out to a list of about 800 people, and we announce them on this radio show as well. So if you've got an event, let the world know about it. So tonight, actually in about half an hour, if you don't live in the outlying suburbs, you've still got time to get to it, which is a solidarity gathering for the Black GST Stolen Wealth Games at Trades Hall on the corner of Victoria and Lygon Street, Carlton, starting 6:30. Black GST core members Robbie Thorpe, Gary Foley and Targan will be speaking about campaign updates, including reports of a meeting with state government ministers as the date for the Stolen Wealth Games rapidly approaches, 40 days to go. So I think that was in result. Those talks were about where people might be able to stay, given that it sounds like there's going to be a bit of an interstate influx of people not just coming to see some athletes run around and around in circles.
They're running really, really fast.
They are. There's also a Trades Hall. You can pop around the corner and go to the Industrial Workers of the World Melbourne group meeting at 7 p.m. upstairs. Just says upstairs.
Well, the Wobblies are back.
The Wobblies are back. Didn't say where in Trades Hall, it just says upstairs. Just look for wobbly people and you'll find them.
You'll see them, yeah.
There's also an anti-racist solidarity meeting at Brunswick Town Hall on Thursday, this Thursday, 7 p.m. tomorrow, a mass meeting organised by the ETU, Socialist Party, and others to give a working class response to racist ideas. Speakers include CMFEU Secretary Martin Kingham, ETU Secretary Dean Meadle, Phil Cleary, Greens Councillor Andrea Sharam, Shireen Hassan from the Islamic Council of Victoria, Hanifa Dean, and special guest speaker Omar Mehi. And that's all.
Excellent. Well, that was another...
That's all that I know about.
Melbourne Indie Media Radio for another week. We'll be back next Wednesday at 5 till 6, same time, same place, on 3CR 855 AM and on the web. Coming up next is Raising Our Voices, and they've got part two of the Community for All public meeting. So I'm going to play a track now. Oh, by the way, our last track before was Tortoise off the album It's All Around You. I think it was Eyes/Dot. And the track coming up is Move by Miles Davis off the album Birth of the Cool. So we'll see you next week. Have a good one.
See ya.